welcome to Karen's Couch and Happy New Year to you. Chances are you've made some New Year's resolutions for 2015, just like I have. Now, my New Year's resolutions do include my health and my well-being, and hopefully yours does too. So we thought we'd create this compilation of our best clips over the last 12 months. So cast your mind back to episode number 3, where we introduced you to Dr. Will Tuttle. Now, I wanted to really give you guys some options to explore around raw vegan foods, and Dr. Will Tuttle was just spectacular because he talked a lot about how we can bring humans and animals together in an environment that enhances life for all of us. So check it out. It was a really amazing episode, one that really touches the heart and soul.
Basically, people who eat a whole foods, organic, plant-based diet, those are the big three. Plant-based, number one, organic, number two, and unprocessed or minimally processed.
Yeah.
If we're eating that as a foundation of health, then, you know, statistically, we have a much tinier risk of diabetes, osteoporosis, obesity, heart disease, cancer of various forms, liver disease, kidney disease, autoimmune disease, dementia, you know, the whole... unfortunately, the actual huge number of diseases that people in the West are unfortunately is plaguing us, and so really eating less protein, more healthy carbohydrates and vegetables and fruits, not only we find is really delicious, but what I talk about in the World Peace Diet is that it's the foundation of coming back to our inherent intelligence and compassion. But veganism is, I think, really, in a nutshell, it's coming back to our true home and learning to look when we see a being and see a being rather than just seeing a thing.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to be proud of. It's not being better than anybody. It's just simply looking with eyes of radical inclusion, that I'm going to include all living beings within the sphere of my caring and my concern. And I think that's the foundation of real intelligence and sanity, and it's our true nature. We have to be divorced from our true nature. We have to have our intelligence suppressed by being forced to go through 3 times a day meals where we learn to look with eyes of reductionism and commodification and might makes right and exclusion and dominate what I refer to in the World Peace Diet as the sacred feminine. Because I think women in general, but also men, have within us a natural compassion and sensitivity, but when we're forced to eat animals, that gets repressed. And so I refer to this as Sophia in the World Peace Diet, this ability to love life and nurture life and protect life, and that's the source of real health. Real health comes when we have a healthy community, healthy world, healthy ecosystems, and psychological and spiritual and emotional health, that when we cause imprisonment and pain and suffering to others, we will end up in prison in pain and suffering ourselves. And so even though the pigs and cows and chickens and fishes don't retaliate, they don't rise up and do a class action lawsuit against us or come back and attack us. You know, they just take it. You can cut them, you can mutilate them, you can eat their, you know, dairy products and eggs and all that. And they suffer terribly because we steal these things from them and steal their babies and steal their lives and steal their purposes. But our violence towards them always retaliates. But we live in a society that's so ethically and emotionally and really intellectually immature that we don't recognize it. We don't see it coming back as physical disease, psychological disease, cultural disease, as war and conflict. So through the meditation I did there, I was able to finally, in some ways, to extricate my mind out of that programming and realize that what I am and what you are and what all our listeners are, and really I think what all living beings are, essentially is infinite and eternal consciousness that was never born and will never die, that is pure and free and of the nature of love and kindness and celebration of life. That's our essential true nature, but we're born into a culture where we're taught, basically, unfortunately, to forget all that and compete with each other. And the system we're born into basically extricates most of the wealth and health out of the masses and into the hands of a tiny elite. And so who own the big meat, dairy, egg, pharmaceutical, military, medical complex, and this huge, and so if we want to create a world of equality and freedom for all of us, for the people and for the animals and for our children and for the ecosystems, we have to question that. And the place to question it is our plate. because anthropologists understand that the main way any culture transmits its values is through the meals. These are the most intimate, powerful rituals we go through.
Well, it's so where we connect, isn't it?
It's
we sit down to the table together as a family with our friends, and it's always a very social interaction. You want to get together with somebody, let's go and have a coffee, or let's go and have something
always.
To eat together. It's food.
All over the world, every culture, it's food.
Yeah.
So that's why it's tough in many ways for people. They hear what we're saying, and they go, that's right. It's better for the earth, it's better for the animals, it's better for my health, it's better, better, better. And then you say, let's do it. Let's go vegan. They go, well, what'll my husband think? Or
it's
what'll
true.
They think at work? And that's the biggest problem. People want to fit in. So what veganism is, in many ways, is just understanding this deeply enough that I'm willing to live it no matter what other people think, and then actually helping them. And I think it's the greatest gift we can give to others is to live this, to thrive as vegans, and to spread this message, and it frees everyone. We see this happening more and more. People are waking up and realizing that we shouldn't really go along with the food fads that are telling us that we need to not eat, that carbohydrates are bad, for example. You know, carbohydrates, especially complex carbohydrates, are the fuel our bodies are made to run on. There's no carbohydrates in any animal food. That's why these diets are so devastating, actually.
Yeah. Well, because there's a lot out there about the high-fat, low-carb. The high-fat, low-carb diet is really, you know, it's very confusing, actually. It's very confusing for people who are really just keen to eat for health. But I think the thing that makes what you're talking about so magical is that it's not just about diet. It's about living in a world that's sustainable for all of us. And it's about making choices that are sustainable for everybody. And I love the way you talk about seeing animals as beings.
You have to.
But I think the best thing that you could do, if you're even curious about this, and you know what I actually want to ask you to do for everybody that's watching and everybody that's listening on the podcast as well, what I want to ask you to do is whether you agree with myself and Dr. Tuttle, whether you agree with us or you don't agree with us, do the research. Go and check it out, because the transformation begins with questioning. And if you are questioning anything, it's time to start to do the research for yourself. Now, I also want to say that it doesn't matter what we believe, you can always find information that will back your point of view. Do you agree?
I really do agree. Yeah, you always can, but you said it perfectly. Just do the research and with an open mind and with a yearning, I think, to become free of the program.
So check this out for a contrast. After we had Dr. Will Tuttle on the show, we were so fortunate to be able to snaffle the amazing Nell Stevenson to come and join us and talk to us about her view around diet. Now, she's a huge advocate for the paleo diet, and she's written books on the subject, spoken on national and international television in the United States. So we were very blessed to have her join us. Check out her take on what it takes to be fit and healthy when it comes to your diet.
Sure enough, I went back online, learned about the paleo diet, and it just made sense to me that we should be focusing on eating a large amount of local fresh produce, balanced out with natural proteins and fats, and avoiding things in package and wrappers, and also avoiding grains, dairy, and legumes. And similar to you, I had experimented with lots of different types of eating strategies, partly because I wanted to be lean as an athlete, and partly because I wanted to feel good. And I was vegan for 2 years. And you know, the interesting thing to note about that is that there's actually quite a bit of similarity between true paleo, which is what I've begun to call it, and vegan, because they're both plant-based. One of the major misconceptions about paleo is that it's the same as Atkins, or that it's an all-protein diet, or it's an all-raw meat diet, and that's just not accurate. But as I got to the point where I'm at now, you know, I've been paleo myself for 9 years. I work with clients all around the world, helping them implement the paleo principles to their lifestyle, and I've just seen remarkable changes in people, from losing tremendous amounts of weight, clearing up their skin conditions, being able to, under their doctor's supervision, stop taking their different types of medication for diabetes or hypertension. It's been really amazing. And I do honestly think it's a really fantastic way to eat. When I say true paleo, I've started to use that phrase because I'm trying to set true paleo, as is presented by the work of my mentor, Dr. Lauren Cordain, as far as what it really is and some of the different permutations that are coming out that kind of defeat the purpose. But the point of the paleo diet is to mimic what our ancestors ate in easy to find foods that are available to us without actually having to go hunting or fishing ourselves,
yeah,
that we can find easily at the farmer's market or the grocery store. So it doesn't mean that you actually, again, have to go hunt and fish and pick berries by yourself. Certainly you can if you are inclined to do so, but it's not necessary. It's just focusing on fresh, whole, hopefully organic if it's in the budget, food that's available to you locally and balanced. And it's just an incredibly easy way to eat. But mostly you are getting protein from wild fish, grass-fed meats, pastured poultry, that type of meat, versus an approach where you're focusing on commercially available bacon and poor quality meats where the animals are raised inhumanely. And kind of to hit on the point you said earlier, one of the reasons I was vegan was also for ethical reasons. So it was a huge transition for me to be eating paleo. It certainly did not happen overnight. And animal welfare is still a concern. And the way that I found balance for myself is actually just to make sure that every time I buy fish or chicken or beef or anything, it's coming from a reliable source that's local, that's raised the animals humanely. I will not ever buy factory farmed chicken or meat because it's on sale, because that's actually perpetuating a really horrible situation we have here in the U.S. I'm not sure how bad it is in Australia, but the inhumane treatment of animals is appalling, and I don't ever want to support that. But I do think that supporting the small ranchers who are trying to do the right thing actually helps in a good way, because you're trying to show people that it can be done this way and that there are other options versus buying those poorly raised animals and contributing to those practices.
Because you were saying that it's important to have grass-fed meat rather than grain-fed meat.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if, you know, if we're allergic to wheat or we're allergic to gluten and then we go and eat meat thinking we're doing the right thing, if the meat is grain-fed, we're still getting the same chemical reaction in the body. Is that right?
It's totally right. And I mean, the other thing, it's just not natural for the animals. It's not natural for our planet. It just doesn't make sense on any level, except if you look at it from a financial perspective, where, you know, if you look at a vendor who's implementing inhumane farming practices and they're really just, their goal is to create more meat, then you see things like chickens that weigh 5 or 6 pounds that have been eating corn and pellets and who knows what else. But chicken isn't supposed to weigh 5 or 6 pounds. And it's always interesting when I take a client to a farmer's market and show them that a pastured hen is tiny. It weighs about 2 pounds, two or three pounds. And that hen has been foraging and eating worms and bugs and things in the soil, which it's supposed to eat, versus a factory farmed chicken, which weighs, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 times the weight. And it's been fattened up. And that's another reason why when I'm talking with clients and they're talking about how they don't know if they'll be able to give up their bread and their pasta and these other things, which really are nothing more than fillers. There's no nutritional value in them. And it does a great job at fattening up an animal, and it will do a great job at fattening up a person as well as make them sick. You hit the nail on the head earlier too when you talked about the sugar and the sugar addiction. I think that's not at all an exaggeration. And I have clients who cannot implement the idea of everything in moderation because it is a drug. And for some people, that one cookie is never going to be one cookie. It's going to be a box of cookies. And sometimes it's a week of eating a box of cookies. And that's the type of thing you have to cut cold turkey. But I think a lot of people also don't realize it's not just eating candy and things that are obviously full of white sugar, but just eating refined grains like white bread and white pasta and that kind of thing. That's also sugar, and that also is going to perpetuate somebody's likelihood of becoming diabetic and obese and having all sorts of other health issues. So it's just really bad news. We need to really focus on fresh vegetables, deep, rich colors. Ideally, if you can have all the colors of the rainbow gracing your plate over the course of the day, you'd be in a great position. If you talk about somebody that's, say somebody's interested in becoming paleo, and you know, sometimes they want to do it in stages. So maybe they're coming from a background where they're eating a lot of fast food, a lot of candy, and the idea of going completely paleo overnight is too overwhelming.
Yeah.
And so that person might want to start gluten-free for week one, but they're still eating the other things. And then week two, they're also going to cut out dairy, something like that. I think that's fine. However, the caveat is there are certain things that I feel people should cut out right away. And white sugar is definitely one of those. Because I don't hesitate comparing it to a drug, and you would never hear somebody who is trying to battle a drug addiction be counseled that they can have just a little bit. You've just got to stop it. And sugar has an opiate-like effect on the brain, and that's what happens when people that have the sugar addiction have a little bit, and at that moment in time, it seems like a really good idea to have more. So that's one thing that I feel people should just cut cold turkey. And then if you want to transition the rest of the way into it, I think that's fine. And ultimately, what I like to present to people is the idea to try it at 100% for 30 days in the real approach, the true paleo approach, and see how you feel. And like you said before, I think it is a journey. And sometimes we try different ways of eating and we feel better in some ways and that works for a while. And then we try something else. And I'm very glad that I was vegan for 2 years because I took away quite a bit from it. And now that I can speak with clients that are vegan or that are thinking about becoming paleo and share my own experience, I think it's just invaluable.
Let's explore something that I'm really curious about and super interested to get your take on this, given that you are, you know, such a powerhouse in this movement. There are lots of different diets, and I do agree that eating is absolutely a journey.
Yes.
Finding what works best for us is a journey. Would you say that paleo is the best for everybody, or do you think it's a case of finding what works for you and then going with that? What are your views around that, that horses for courses versus one specific way?
I think it's a combination of things. I do, from the bottom of my heart, believe that we as humans are meant to be eating this way. However, I feel I'm a bit less dogmatic than I was when I began doing what I do. And it only ever came from a place of passion and seeing how so many people can heal from being sick to overweight and how what a world of good it does.
Yeah.
But I also realize that sometimes I can be a little too passionate and it can come across as dogmatic. And I don't want to scare people off from giving it a try.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the bottom line is, like I said a couple weeks ago on the Dr. Oz show, if you're taking somebody who's coming from the standard American diet, eating a lot of highly refined, high in sugar, high in sodium foods, and you're at least getting them partly there, I think that's fantastic. So, you know, it might, for some people, it might be just as simple as just adding some vegetables before they even take anything away. So I think it's a work in progress. And I think if we, because we're talking about reaching so many people and as a whole, I think if we can get everybody eating healthier as a starting point, I think that's the position. And yes, I think everybody could benefit from doing the paleo diet. But, you know, again, some people find that they go paleo for 30 days and they test things and they decide that certain things are something that they want to have now and then, like going home to grandma's house for the Christmas time and you have to have a piece of her pie, you know, that type of thing. You know, on the flip side, sometimes people try things and they realize that thing that they used to eat all the time without really thinking about it actually made them very sick.
Yeah.
For example, they used to love pizza and they go paleo for 30 days and they go back and have the pizza and it tastes a little bit saltier than they remember, and because they've stopped salting their food, and they wake up the next day with a migraine headache from the gluten and a bloated belly from the dairy.
Yeah.
You know, then they can decide, okay, is this really worth it? Do I want to make myself feel this way? And for me, that's exactly how I've been able to stay paleo, is after having been sick for 20 something years and realizing what the culprit was, it immediately made anything with gluten completely unattractive. In fact, I wrote a blog post about it and I called it the cardboard phase, to talk about how I'd rather eat a piece of cardboard than a cake, because I know that if I eat something with gluten, I will feel so sick for at least a few days. It's just not worth it. There's enough beyond our control that we can get sick by accident, like getting food poisoning or something like that. I don't see why I would purposely want to eat something that I know will make me feel very sick. So even if somebody's not actually physically feeling sick, but they're just having a hard time concentrating at work, or they're feeling that 4 o'clock fatigue, or they're having a hard time sleeping, you know, I bet they're probably having sugar crashes and spikes and dips all day long. And that's just a function of starting the day with what I call a grain festival, getting up and having, whether even if it's not as extreme as having some of the cereals that are marketed toward children, but you know, a bagel or oatmeal or all these other grain-based foods, that's just not the best way to start the day. We need protein and we need veg at any meal. There's no such thing as dinner food or lunch food or breakfast food. It's just food. And if we start the day with a balance, then we're far more likely to have balanced energy levels. And actually, you know, this is something that I think would be appealing to large companies, is that if they can get their employees eating this way, they're going to have better mental productivity and better focus and less sick days and that, the whole nine yards.
So now it's time to go down the rabbit hole a little bit. Food addictions. This is one of the biggest issues that is afflicting humanity today. We're so caught up with what we eat, why we eat, when we eat, how we eat. It's become an obsession. So we got David Katz to join us on the show on episode number 16. And this guy was one of our most highest rating shows, when he shares his opinion that no one size fits all and you need to find your own philosophy, I guess, that works best for you. Check out David Katz. You're going to love every second of it.
The things that affect most of us, and this is true both in Australia and the States, you know, the big concerns are things like heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, dementia, these common diseases, obesity. these are not determined by a single gene. They're determined by the behavior of many genes. And we have very powerful evidence to show that our lifestyle choices change the behavior of our very genes. So, for example, if you adopt an optimal lifestyle program, and this has been studied and reported in some of the top journals, you can take genes that promote cancer and turn them off. And you can take genes that suppress cancer and turn them on. And similar results have come in related to diabetes and heart disease and weight. So what I think we are learning in the modern age is that DNA, for the most part, is not destiny. And to a far greater extent, dinner is destiny. In other words, the things we do in our daily lives are powerful enough to alter the behavior of our very genes. So really, control resides in our hands. I was invited by an academic journal. It's entitled Annual Review in Public Health, and as the name suggests, that's what it's about. It's important topics in public health and a summary of where we are that can be published. And the request to me, and this came in about 18 months ago, was we would like you to review the literature on claims about diets for health and weight loss and answer this question: can we say what diet is best for health? And the reason I was asked to do this is I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't really care, Karen, which diet is best for health. I care about the truth and sharing truth and empowering people with the truth. So I'm not trying to sell a particular diet. Oh, what I would like to do is help people add years to life and life to years. That's my job. That's my mission in life. So the journal knew this. They knew that I've authored three editions of a nutrition textbook for healthcare professionals. So I seemed like the right guy to do this job. Well, I did this job, reviewed the literature to the best of my ability without bias, and looked at claims for vegan diets and vegetarian diets and Mediterranean diets and low-fat diets and low-carb diets and high-protein diets and low-glycemic diets and almost every other variation you can think of.
Right, and what did you find?
And let me get right to the punchline. What jumped out at me was that all of the diets that perform well, whether they're in large population studies or smaller intervention studies, all of the diets that perform well share common features. They're about real food, in other words, stuff that doesn't glow in the dark, right? I mean, you're talking about Gatorade. I mean, you look at that stuff, it looks like it would glow in the dark, right? That can't be a good thing. So it's all about real food from the real world. You know, you can identify what it is and where it came from. You recognize it as food. Real food, mostly plants. Even a paleo diet, and that was included too.
Yeah.
That's very popular these days.
Yes, it is.
But you know, our Stone Age ancestors ate a wide variety of wild plant foods, and then they ate game. So that, you know, the meat they ate was like antelope. Mm. They ate mammoth. You know, it's hard to find a mammoth these days, but you know, they certainly weren't eating grain-fed cattle.
They
certainly weren't eating pastrami or bologna or salami or, you know, none of this stuff, or pepperoni, the stuff that we eat today.
Yeah.
So they ate a diet of mostly plants, and then they ate the flesh of animals that in turn ate mostly plants. So even a paleo diet is real food, mostly plants.
Yeah.
That theme is common to all of the diets that perform well, all of them. And the diets that don't adhere to that theme don't perform well. So, for example, you know, the early version of the Atkins diet, which was a lot of saturated fat and meat and did not include a variety of plants, actually did not perform terribly well when you look at metabolic factors. Now, most of the argument then, most of the my diet can beat your diet that we're subject to every week, is about the elements of these diets that don't overlap. So, you know, I'm going to focus on lowering the glycemic load and you're not. And I'm going to focus on restricting fat and you're not. Here's the beauty of honoring the theme, Karen. If you eat a diet of real foods, mostly plants, and so what that means is vegetables, fruits, beans, lentils and other legumes, nuts, seeds, whole grains, and yes, I do advocate for whole grains despite the popularity. I do. Despite the, unless you're gluten sensitive and need to avoid them, but you know, people who have a peanut allergy have to avoid peanuts. That doesn't mean they're toxic. It just means some people have to avoid them. Same with whole grains. If you're sensitive to gluten, avoid it. Otherwise, whole grains are a rich source of a wide variety of vitamins and minerals and a great source of fiber, and most of us get too little of that. So vegetables, fruits, beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, whole grains with or without lean meat, dairy, eggs, fish, seafood, poultry. Those are all up to you. Those can be added on. But if your diet is mostly made up of those plant foods, and if as many of them as possible come direct from nature so that the ingredient list is short.
Yeah, right.
You know, ideally just one word, right? I mean, you know, the ingredient list in spinach is
spinach,
right? I mean, you know, the closer you get to that, the closer you are to the bullseye. The evidence is absolutely overwhelming that this basic theme of healthful eating is associated with great outcomes. To me, the formula for healthy living, the top three things I already mentioned, feet, forks, and fingers. So physical activity, eating well, not smoking. But the next three that also really count are sleep, stress, and love. Getting enough sleep, managing stress in our lives. We can't avoid it, but we can manage it effectively. Mm. And love. And you know, it can be romantic love. That's great. But frankly, just strong social connections.
Yeah.
People to care about who care about you. If you get those six right, if you fire on those six cylinders, feet, forks, fingers, sleep, stress, and love, everything else is vanishingly less important. We cannot say which specific diet is best because those studies haven't been done. Imagine, Karen, a study that has someone like you who wants to be a vegan to be randomly assigned for the rest of your life either to be a vegan or to have a paleo diet where you have to eat a lot of meat. Mm. You would never sign up for that diet. Most people have an inclination to eat a particular way. Yeah. So those studies have never been done. I don't think they ever will be done.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can say, and I don't think we'll be able to say anytime soon, is an optimal vegan diet better than an optimal Mediterranean diet or an optimal paleo diet? But frankly, who cares? Let's get to the common theme of healthful eating. And then the beauty of not knowing which specific diet that adheres to that theme is best means you get to choose the diet that adheres to the theme that you like best, that works best for you and your family. And that's a beautiful thing because, you know, yes, we want the pleasure of good health, but I think we also want to enjoy our food. And my wife and I advocate for loving the food that loves us back. I think there's a real opportunity to do that.
Now, this is a topic that's super close to my heart. Jeannie Siegel came onto the show on episode number 17, and we spoke about emotional eating. So she's got a take that talks about how you can establish what's emotional hunger versus what's physical hunger. You don't want to miss a second of this one. This woman knows her stuff.
The source of perhaps all emotional eating is more stress than we can handle.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you on that. Let's talk about the emotional eating and your wealth of knowledge on it. Where does it start? Why do we eat emotionally? Why do we do that? What's wrong with us that we do that?
First of all, there's nothing wrong with us. We have a nervous system that can be calmed and soothed by various sensory stimulations, okay? We can listen to music that feels good. We can touch things that feel good and immediately feel better. One of the ways that we are affected by our senses, there's a sense of taste. And from the time we're tiny babies, we learn that through that sense, we can become calm, focused, soothed. And so that sense is what we tend to rely on, especially if we don't to one of two things. If we don't have a lot of people in our lives that we can go to and who will listen to us and, you know, we can talk our hearts out to when they won't judge us and they won't give us advice. They'll just listen. We don't have enough of those people, most of us. And the second way that we can calm and soothe very quickly and independently is through the senses. And the sense of eating is one that most people just have most practice in and use exclusively. And that's the problem. It's not that it doesn't work. It's that there are other senses that would do the same thing without the negative side effects that are affected, you know, that happen when we eat all the time to calm and soothe. More stressed than ever. We shouldn't be. I mean, in some ways, we're safer, more comfortable. You know, we have a lot more than anybody ever had before us. Mm. But on the other hand, we do lots of things that make life even more stressful. In my book, in the Feeling Love book, I talk about the fact that, you know, we use this technology. We misuse technology. Technology is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
But when we overuse it, we add stress to our lives rather than reduce stress. That's one thing. There are a number of things that we do. We don't stay connected to what we feel. If we stayed connected, if we stayed out of our heads more, if we worried less, we tend to be big time worriers. And the more you worry, the more anxious you get, the more stressed you get.
Yeah.
And so we're always in the then and there thinking about what did happen that we didn't like or what could happen that we might not like. So we have a lot of bad habits to take a look at and, you know, control a little more, you know, put them in their place a little bit better. Isn't that we never should worry and that we shouldn't use technology and that we shouldn't depend on various things that we shouldn't listen to loud music ever, that kind of thing. Mm. But we do a lot of things to excess. And what happens is we become increasingly stressed and our nervous system, it becomes overloaded. And that's why we need so many of these quick, fast fixes, which are often food related.
An emotional eater or using, you know, food to calm and soothe ourselves. And you said the difference between emotional hunger and physical hunger is actually quite obvious in that emotional hunger comes on suddenly and must be satisfied immediately. As soon as I read that, my eyes like popped out of my head and I thought, this woman, she's in my head, she knows me. Whereas physical hunger, you say, comes on gradually and it can wait. And it's open to lots of options that sound good rather than just something sweet or something that's fat laden, which emotional hunger tends to drive us towards. And you were saying in this article, you said that physical hunger doesn't make us feel bad about ourselves afterwards, after we've eaten, whereas emotional hunger, while the comfort and the soothing is temporary and momentary, the experience afterwards is probably worse. And I certainly know in my case, the experience after I've had that chocolate or that cake or whatever it is that I've eaten is worse. I feel worse about myself than what I did before I ate it. You know, the emotional condition that it leaves me in after I've stuffed myself until I'm sick, it feels worse than what I felt before. So then I need to eat again.
Well, you feel out of control.
Oh, when you, yes.
When you're stressed to the point of almost of overwhelm,
yeah.
That's what happens. What happens is a reflex kicks in. Your nervous system now moves from I'm in control to fight, flight, or freeze. And you need something very quick, very fast to bring it back into balance. And that's where, so you're acting on the reflex. You're not acting on a sense. You're acting on a reflex, and reflexes come on very fast, and they demand your attention, and they demand that you do something about it. If I'm feeling, you know, fight, flight, or freeze, I need a fix right away,
help.
So I can feel better.
Help!
Help!
Help! Help us! What do we do?
We can learn. First of all, we need to learn to identify when we are starting to become overwhelmed. Some people get angry, agitated. Some people space out. Some people almost freeze. As you start to get better, and the program on the website, the toolkit program, helps you to start to learn to identify. It's not hard. It's obvious. If you ask somebody who knows you well, they'll tell you right away how you respond to stress. It's no secret.
Yeah,
and then once you learn, then you start saying, I'm starting to feel I'm getting overstressed. What can I do? Do I look at these beautiful flowers? Do I, maybe jump up and down a little, move a little? I sit in rocking chair. I have rocking chairs all over my house because when I rock, when I move like that back and forth, it calms and soothes me. Other people, you know, a lot of people have a rocking chair in their office. I think that's a good idea. But different people will be affected by different sensory experiences. It's not one size fits all, but it's a fun thing to explore and learn what kinds of sensory input work very rapidly and very well for you. And then you collect a few of them because you need it when you're driving. You need it when you're talking to someone on the phone or face-to-face. Different settings require, you know, you'll need different things to help you as needed.
So it's called the Toolkit, is the free program. So to our viewers and also to our podcast listeners, the link to the Toolkit is going to be on the bottom of or underneath this video. So make sure that you go and have a look at that. So hopefully you've enjoyed some of my favorite cuts of our diet and food shows that we've run in the, on Karen's Couch over the last 12 months. And hopefully too that that sets you back on track when it comes to your New Year's resolutions for the rest of this year. Now don't go anywhere because I've actually got somebody super special joining me on the show on Karen's Corner coming up next. If you've been following me, you know that I'm a vegan. I've been flirting with the whole raw movement. And I found somebody fabulous. His name is Scott Mathias. And he's also the author of a raw food book called Let's Eat Raw. So don't go anywhere because we're going to be doing a bit of a raw food demonstration in a couple of seconds. Hang in there. I'll be right back. Welcome. Welcome back to Karen's Corner. Now, no doubt you guys have got all of your New Year's resolutions covered with the show and we've put you back on track. So I thought I'd share mine with you. And mine this year is to go all in, boots and all in raw. You know, I've been flirting with the raw movements. I've gone to 30% and 50% and about 80%. And I kind of got stuck there until Scott and I had a conversation and this book came out. And I thought, you know what? Who better to take me on the journey of going 100% raw, boots and all, as I said, than Scott Mathias, author of Let's Eat Raw. Now this Scott, I think Let's Eat Raw has got to be the most simple, down-to-earth, easy recipe book I've ever come across when it comes to eating raw. How did you get the inspiration to put this together?
Pure inspiration. I mean, you know my story is all health-related.
Absolutely.
Won't go into the details, but basically I was forced by my own health issues to sort things out. And then just inspirationally put together a whole lot of food that I enjoyed, from mushroom soups to mushrooms on toast to raw bread and things like that, just using 100% vegetable or fruit-based ingredients. Bit of dehydration, but no cooking, no pots or pans in the house, no major gas or electricity bills.
So you have no pots and no pans?
No. No, I have a sharp knife, I have a chopping block, I have a couple of little gadgets and things to make sauces and spiroolies to make spaghetti, and that's basically it.
Oh,
and heaps of imagination.
So show us what you're going to go through with us today. I guess what? I get to do the taste testing.
Yep. Okay.
I always want to go, no.
Simple spaghetti. You know, the old zucchini, when I was growing up, Mum used to mash it up, used to be boiled up, and it came out stodgy and tasteless. Well, now the zucchini has taken on a completely new life of its own. A lot of nutrients in the green skin. You can peel it if you want to and create a spaghetti out of it. And what I'm going to do is actually just put it in the spirulina machine here, wind it around, and I'm going to create a spaghetti that's really, really awesome. And you don't need much. My partner and I, we live off a zucchini a day, keeps the doctor away.
So one zucchini is enough for two of you?
One zucchini is enough for two of us. And here we go. And this is a thin spaghetti, and you can get other blades on this particular little device that make it slightly larger. And that's really all that's required.
Now this machine, or this little gadget, is called a spiruli. So it actually, the way that the blades are configured, as soon as you put your vegetable through, it turns it into that beautiful, fluffy, gorgeous, and quite aromatic too. Once the vegetable goes through the spirulina, you get to smell all the magic of
unbelievable.
The, oh, it is.
Now, it's while that's sitting there, Karen, we'll just throw a little bit of lime juice on it, because the lime juice basically brings out the flavors. Oh, and I use a lot of limes. The limes are very alkalizing for the body, of course, and alkalinity every day keeps the bugs away. So that's awesome. So that's the basic spaghetti. Don't salt it at this particular point.
Right.
In here, I've got tomatoes.
Right.
I have got semi-dried tomatoes. I have got some red bell pepper. I've got some shallots or spring onions. I've got some garlic and some Italian herbs. And essentially, that's it. Now, this is what I used to do when I boiled things up for 4 or 5 hours on the stove.
And then you blend it up and you make like a pasta sauce.
Yeah. I don't boil it anymore. Same recipe, and we just stick it in the little fry vest. And we create a lovely sauce. Just only take a moment or two. Give it a bit of a wiggle. All done. Keep it nice and thick. And we will then just take this lid off.
So we're keeping that nice and thick. We've got, so what have we got in there again? We've got fresh tomatoes.
Fresh tomatoes.
Sun-dried tomatoes.
Some sun-dried or semi-dried tomatoes. Some garlic. I just put a favourite chilli of yours in as well.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Let me taste it.
Some spring onions. Okay, and a bit of Italian herb. Bit of desert salt and pepper and things like that. Awesome.
Oh, my goodness. That is heaven on a spoon.
So we just put that on here.
It can't be that easy.
It is that easy. And we put a little bit of parsley. Normally you might put some basil or something like that on it, but at the moment, this time of the year, a bit of parsley and a dab of cracked pepper, because pepper just finishes it off, and this is good. Grind that over.
Oh, that, you know, just, and I wish I could explain this properly, but it's almost like language doesn't go there. It's this fresh burst of sweet and savoury mixed together with the beautiful zing of that chilli, and you can taste everything. It's just, oh, that's just spectacular.
And there we go.
How easy is that?
And it took literally a minute or two. There we go. I'll give you the
honours
of actually having a taste of that.
Oh, this is fabulous. Look at that gorgeous spaghetti. Oh, okay, so I'm just going to wind that around so that I don't look like
Okay, getting protein out of all greens. Got to say, protein in all greens. Don't get caught up in the myth of having to eat animal protein at all to get your protein. It's a total myth. So there's lots of fats, there's lots of oils, there's lots of protein in there, lots of trace minerals. You have all you need from that. And of course, you're getting 100% of the nutrients because it's raw. The body's not fighting to break down any cooked food.
The flavour in that with the beautiful lime juice and the herbs and that sweetness of that tomato is really, it's intoxicating.
It is.
It is intoxicating. And I have to be honest for myself, and it's a personal choice, so I have to be honest for myself in that when I eat raw food...
Oh, that's awesome. You could just put that on its own.
It's awesome.
Just on its own. The tomato sauce is so versatile.
Oh, it's
And
gorgeous.
That recipe is in the book. It's a staple, basically... tomato sauce that you can use for pretty well anything, whether you're going to blend it with zucchini or anything else, like even cucumber, carrot, sweet potato, daikon and things like that. You can use it any which way you like.
So let's have a look at some other recipes that you've got in your cookbook here, Scott. So what are we looking at here?
That basically is a raw bread. It's an oregano. It's an Italian herb bread that uses zucchini and various other corn and various other vegetables. Lovely series of dips, again, using sprouted chickpeas in a hummus. Lovely gazpachos.
Oh, I made this one the other day.
Yep, things that are really, really simple. And on the top, you've got a lovely nut sauce. And those nut sauces and creams, those recipes are all in the book. And that's what it's about. You bring the flavours into the food.
Yeah.
And that's most important. There's a mini salsa with
What's
a lovely...
What's in that one?
Again, just corn and tomato and cucumber and a bit of chilli, just heat it up a bit. Bit of coriander, lime juice.
And we cut that corn straight off the raw corn cob.
Take it straight off the corn cob, yep.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
Beautiful.
And I mean, you know, these things are accessible and they're very easy to do, and you have all the body needs, and that's the key to it. Do I look undernourished?
No, sir, you actually don't.
No.
You don't. And for somebody that's 112, I think you're doing really well.
Absolutely. And just a reminder, I lost 24 kilos when I started on my own journey. And I have to say, you don't go thin and keep going thin. Mm. The body seems to have this idea that it'll stop when it needs to. So I probably have the same physical disposition and weight that I had when I was about 25.
And you know what? I have to say, I had this conversation with a dear friend of mine the other day, was that you look incredibly healthy. Your skin constantly glows. You're incredibly fit and strong.
Yeah.
And the white, I mean, I don't know if you guys can pick this up on camera, but the whites of Scott's eyes are almost piercingly white. Honestly, you are. You're an epitome of health. And you know, the other thing that I really love about what I witness in you is this consistent calmness. There's a peace about you, which I think
is... I have my moments, but yeah, no, you do.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
But there's this peace about you, and it's almost... you know, I've done some cooking, or not cooking, you wouldn't call them cooking, but some master classes with you. And the thing that I love about the way that you relate to food, and you can feel it in your book, is that you are so connected to the innate intelligence that exists in the food and our earth and our planet.
That's a brilliant way of putting it. Connected to the innate intelligence. I mean, the DNA of the food complements our own DNA. And if you're actually connecting with it and you're honouring it through gratitude and thanks, then its job becomes so much easier for your body. And I've got to say that I'm in my 60s and I'm on no meds. I have no supplements, okay? I don't have any issues. There are no aches or pains, but I came from a space of aches and pains.
Yeah.
And I came from mild depression, fibromyalgia, arthritic type pains. I came from those areas that a lot of people are experiencing, and all gone.
All gone.
Nothing. No aches or pains. None whatsoever.
So it's worth diving into.
And no cravings. That's the other thing. It's balance. You don't have any cravings, and that's very, very important.
Mm.
And the best advice I can give anybody is you just take one step at a time, grab the recipe book and do a recipe every day, and then after a year, you've mastered the whole thing.
Yeah. And I think that's certainly been my journey, and again, why this year I'm boots and all, because with your help over the last 12 months and your inspiration and your encouragement, I've really felt like it's easy to do the transition. And it's not because I felt like this is a diet I must do. Mm. It's because as I implemented or introduced more raw into my diet, I felt my body start to zing. Mm. And really it is. It's a case of feeling like a little bit of a zing, whereas previously I would struggle to get out of bed. So this is a diet that has really spoken to me and really worked for me.
It's a major lifestyle change, and it has been for me. It's changed my life. You know, I've attracted very positive things and positive people into my life, like you and my dear partner.
Yeah.
You know, and things have changed now, you know, and vegans don't start wars. Raw vegans definitely don't start wars.
Because there's no war inside,
no,
you know what I'm
there's
saying?
There's no war going on inside.
Oh, isn't it beautiful? Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for the demonstration.
You don't need good luck, but you know where I am. If you have any questions or queries at any time, feel free to just ask.
Oh, and Scott's details are all going to be on the website underneath this show. So if you are interested to just flirt with it or explore it, this is a really fabulous place to start. This actually sits on my kitchen bench and I cook from it every single day. So thank you for joining us on the show, sir. This has been an absolute treat. I'm off to eat because it's lunchtime. So I hope you guys have a fabulous, fabulous experience with Raw, and make your New Year's resolutions all about you and the betterment and the health of you. Thanks for joining us here on Karen's Couch this week. It's been an absolute treat once again. Join us next week. Go to iTunes, download the podcast. And if you didn't get to see the video, if you've been listening to the podcast on this show, go to the program, go to the website and check out the video, because the vibrancy of all of the colors, you're not going to want to miss it. So join us here next week on Karen's Couch, and we're going to see you on the journey. All my love. Bye for now.